What's the matter, Ashy?
I don't want you to see me in my costume yet.
What are you wearing?
I'm rehearsing my routine. I have on a tutu and a cowboy hat.
I can see that. A cowboy hat. And on the cowboy hat, you're wearing a little sparkly tiara.
Yeah.
And that's a girl's outfit.
Yeah.
Is there something you want to talk about, Rashi?
Yes, I am making my tape for Toddlers and Tiaras, and I will thank you to get out of it.
You're dressing up like a 2-year-old beauty queen?
Dad, I'm going to warn you. I got to behave really badly to get on this show, and you don't want to see that shit when it breaks down.
Oh, I've seen you behave badly, and actually, your mom is addicted to that show, so yes, actually, I can believe that you would have a very good chance on that show.
All right, well, you go clip your coupons and mix up my special juice, because it's going to help me win.
Your special juice?
It's going to help me win. Yeah, I was watching one episode, and they said that pageant crack doesn't work very good, and so they mix a half a Mountain Dew with a half a Red Bull, and that makes you win.
Rashia, yeah, that's your normal breakfast.
Well, Dad, our secrets are going to be our own.
Hi, this is Paul Dini.
This is Misty Lee, and I have a Muggsy.
And I've got Deuce right in front of me here.
And we have an Emily and an Ezra, and Muggsy is smelling my breath because we're eating coconut M&Ms and almonds, and he's like,
what is that?
We should feed some of that to Rashi because he's looking to keep his energy up. Do you know he's entering beauty contests now?
Oh, yeah, he asked me for some pageant crack. Do you know what that is?
No, what is it?
Pixie sticks.
Pixie sticks.
They call it pageant crack.
So they get high on that. They get the sugar up, and then they go out, and then they like beat each other, or
no, no, that's wrestling.
Oh, that's wrestling. Okay.
They
Yeah.
With the parents and what happens in those seats. Yes, it is.
Oh, I've seen those parents go at each other. They're like it's
damn.
Like Daikaiju, you know, like Japanese monsters.
It
know?
Is. It is.
Most of them look like Japanese monsters.
Yeah, they come up over the. They all come up over the hill and. They come at each other like spider monkeys.
Speaking of coming at like spider monkeys, I'm worried about that wig Rashi was wearing. I think that's an actual human scalp.
I think it probably is.
I think there's like
he
some
just
little...
get stuff out of my closet.
Well, oh, okay. Either that or there's a little bald girl running down the street or something like that.
No, I don't think he would take a fresh one. They get icky.
Okay.
You gotta treat it proper. They gotta be, you know, dried out.
From your collection of body parts and skin and human memorabilia.
Right. Yeah. And yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had a good week.
Yeah, we were. You got all our taxes done. Thank you very much.
Oh, what a mess that was. Actually, it wasn't a mess. It was 35 hours on the phone with the IRS in a week. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you call, I think I was complaining about this just last week anyway, wasn't I? Yes, I'm pretty sure I was. No? Okay, no. They're looking at me like, no.
To us.
Fresh complaint. Fresh complaints.
Okay.
When you call the IRS, you call and they put you on hold for 45 minutes immediately. You call and they say, press 1 to do this, press 2. As soon as you press a button, you're on hold.
That sorts out all the wannabes.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you immediately go on hold and you're waiting in a queue to get to essentially the gatekeeper, the dispatch, who you wait 45 minutes, you get to call dispatch and he goes, oh, you need to speak with this department. And then you're on hold 2.5 to 3 hours. To get to the proper department.
The key master and the gatekeeper.
And the gatekeeper.
It's like Ghostbusters.
It takes a while.
I'd like to talk to Vince Clorthos, please, about my extension plan.
You know what? If Vince Clorthos was on the other end, it would have been a much more pleasant experience. Just give a guy a pot of coffee and...
It takes a while to get to the level of hell that you
need to. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The book didn't go. 7 circles or nothing.
You know, you'd make a killing if you had some sort of business where you'd called these lines and waited through the stuff for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's
older.
That's a good business, you know.
That's a good business idea, Ezra.
It's harder and harder
I'm
to get
on it now.
Like an actual job. People have to be creative, and I think for their careers, I think that's a good idea. You know, like a phone waiter.
Yeah. A phone waiter.
A phone waiter. It's like I'll do the dialing,
may I take
you do the waiting. That way you And there's got to be some way, like, if the phone waiter is waiting and you're out at the market, that they can sort of get you and then patch you through to wherever you are.
So, yeah, you just call them and party line it and then hang up.
I guess so.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's not a bad idea. I don't know that I would take advantage of that, though, because, like, the phone waiter would have to have direct access to you, and if you walk away, then you paid them for not... Well, I guess whose time are you wasting? The phone waiter's. Speaking of having time wasted, I got in Bank of America's business too. Man, I've been up in everybody's grill for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Girl at the movie theater. Did we cut that? We cut that. Didn't
oh
we?
Yeah, yeah. I had
cut
trouble
all that
with
stuff out. Yeah. I got in a fight with a girl at the ArcLight. Now I just thought I sounded too bitchy and told Ezra take it out.
Yeah.
Because
so
I
you don't you won't you won't hear about that one.
Yeah.
So.
No. No. Well, I mean, I'll tell you in person. Just ask me at a con or something, and I'll tell you what a snot she was. But yeah, it all worked out fine. She got fired and that was the end of it. So, but anyway,
you know what would be a good,
about?
You know, what'd be a good, you know, what'd be a good self-starter job?
What would be a self-starter
I've often thought this would be a really good self-starter job, especially if you lived in a big city with a heavy immigrant population like New York or San Francisco. We're even here in LA.
Is that still true?
What?
Heavy immigrant populations in New York? Seems to me they're all Americans when you go there.
Well, yes, but still, you know, like a menu proofreader for takeout places, you know, because like you'll be no like awesome. Like you'll reading something like
that's
like you'll
funny.
Like you'll be reading like a Thai menu and it's like aromatic chicken
monkey turd stew.
No, it's like no. It's like chicken ting. It's like chicken ting wing. Oh, you made a mistake there, or there's grammar that's not quite right.
Well, or they substitute things trying to be funny or clever, and it's like, oh hey,
yeah,
you know, like Coca-Cola, bite the wax tadpole.
What
do you mean?
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It, like that kind of stuff. The English book, remember? David in Portland Polston got me that English.
Oh yeah, the English book. About it, there's just like little, but hell, you know, there are plenty of supposedly English speaking businesses that make those grammatical mistakes too, because people are growing up without good grammar and without spelling because everybody, you know, if they can't get it on their phone, they don't care about it
anymore. How many people do you think Deuce would feed if we cooked him up like a roast?
My God, that's a horrible thing to say.
I'm just wondering. I'm not going to do it. I just wonder, like, maybe three or four.
That's like a turkey.
Maybe
now
seven.
Now we know where to get your bones.
Look at him. Look at him. This look of betrayal in his face.
Doesn't know what? It's only betrayal if I follow through, and I'm not even thinking about following through. I'm just wondering how many people he would feed. Mm-hmm. All right.
Menu not as many as me.
Right. And not as many as me. I could feed many more people. See, I'm not upset talking about it.
Are you kidding? Look at this gut. I'm a family reunion.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
At least two Thanksgivings in here.
You can always make mock Deuce.
Mock Deuce, okay.
Yeah, just a fake Deuce mold.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, see how many that feeds.
I was just talking to Megan. I used to work at this dental office in Michigan. And I was just talking to her today and saying, so if I needed some alginate. And she was like, what do you want it for? Because do you guys know what alginate is? Alginate is the impression material that you put in your mouth when you go to the dental office.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, well, what do you want it for? And I said, well, I don't want it yet. I'm just saying, hypothetically speaking. And she was like, I'd have to look into what the laws are and whether or not you need an actual license to have that stuff. Because sometimes the chemical reactions and stuff are caustic and you have to be, you know, a licensed place with specific kinds of insurance to have those materials.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you probably wouldn't need that for a vacuform, would you? Do you guys know what a vacuform is? Okay, you do because you're an artist, yeah. But I was just thinking, man, I'd like to have one of those. And I said, you know how intricate kind of soap I could make with a vacuform? Paul's like, do you know how much I do not care? He's like, I was like, I don't know how much one would be.
But here's the thing, like when I was a kid, my favorite toy was a vacuform.
Did you get you burn your little fingers on
all the time. It's a miracle that I have fingers left at all.
Nice unicorn Band-Aid, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Did you see his unicorn Band-Aid?
Nice. Prepping for Unicorn Wednesday tomorrow.
We better let our audience in on what a vacuform is.
Oh, I forgot to tell them. I got all excited about having it.
We knew, but...
A vacuform is a... It's a tool that you use where it's got like a tray with holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that tray, you could turn on a switch and it sucks air down. And so what happens is it's got an arm that comes up the back and a heat lamp that hangs over the entire contraption. Mm-hmm. And on that arm is another tray that lifts up and down, and you can put a piece of plastic on the inside of that up and down tray. And here's how it works. You put something on the suck down base, the suction base, like we'll say a pair of chattering teeth. You put that on the base. And then you put a very thin plastic square in the mobile up and down tray that travels up and down. You put the mobile plastic square up toward the heat lamp until it forms a little bow in it, you know, like it kind of hangs down a little bit. And when the plastic is melted to the point where it's hanging down a bit, you turn the suction on under the chattering teeth, wiggle the middle tray, and down it goes over the chattering teeth, and it suctions real tight onto whatever object it is you're going to make that vacuform of.
Or really? As I would have put it, a quick, easy way to make plastic molds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I figured they would want to know exactly what it was.
You know, it's...
I don't know. I'm like closing my eyes and describing it. Whatever, I'm an idiot.
You know, one of my favorite toys when I was growing up...
about 3 minutes long. Why? Is she describing a vacuum form in way more detail than we needed?
One of my favorite toys growing up, because I'm older than everybody in the room, was Mattel made a toy vacuum form.
Yes, I know.
Called the vacuum form.
And you could have little cars and...
It worked similar. It had a heating unit here... And it had and then you had a platform over here. And what you did was you took what did you call them, arms? Or there was a holder here where you put in a piece of flat colored plastic.
Okay.
That almost looked like an American cheese slice.
Okay.
And then you put it over here.
Over where?
Over the heating unit. The heating unit is here,
Is it? You have to describe for the people at home. Okay. They can't see you.
All right. Imagine this little square toy, you know, like... And there, and half of it, or rectangular.
It's almost like a TV tray.
Yes, and half of it was a heating unit.
The left side.
The left side was a heating unit. And there was this metal, I don't know what you would call it, like I guess an arm, that would hold a piece of plastic.
Like I just described.
And then you'd put, there was like a little holder or a little platform over here where you'd put the item to be copied.
Which would be on the right side.
Yes, on the right side.
So on the left side is the heater, on the right side is the object, and the tray that I described that went up and down in the dental vacuum form went left and right. Left to the heater, and then you flip it over to the right side to the object?
Yeah. And then,
that's interesting.
Or else, you
and
know.
Bad physics.
Well, I'm going back, I'm you know, traipsing back like 30 odd years, you know, remembering the thing. You know, or actually, you could probably go online, Google Images, Mattel vacuum form, and
there you go.
See what it looked like. But I remember, the selling point was, hey kids, you can copy your toy car. So you'd put like a little Matchbox car, Hot Wheels there, and you'd make a little copy of the car. Or you could do a little doll.
But that's not all.
Or you could do your fingers, which would be hot, you know, and then so many kids burn their hands. Or a pet mouse, and you would kill it.
Oh, no.
Or you could do, and that's why vacuum form only lasted a year or two, and I think they yanked them off. But I remember it was like a pretty cool toy. We all wanted to do it, and we all burned the shit out of our hands doing it, because we all wanted to have hand impression. There was no safety guide on it.
Mm-hmm.
They were just counting on you to be more intelligent than you were, that you wouldn't stick your hand in there.
Imagine hours of fun that could be had with a vacuum form in our garage.
Yeah, yeah.
We need one.
Yes.
I'm going to find out how much.
Well, you can probably get them on eBay.
You can get them on eBay, but they're garbage. They're not good ones.
Well, you could probably get the toy, but then getting the plastic, you would have to find somebody who had a big box full of like the plastic strips so you could use it again.
Not necessarily. I mean, excuse me. If you have one of the pieces of plastic, you could go to a Lowe's and probably find something, maybe not in the variety of colors, but you can certainly, and you could just cut that stuff because it's thin enough where you can actually just cut it down to size so that it would fit in your...
Or use American cheese slices.
Yeah. American cheese slices.
That way it's edible too, but wait, I remember...
Ineffective, bacon. I would think. Bacon?
Needs to be made out of bacon.
Bacon, there you go. Vacuum form your Hot Wheels car in bacon.
Well, yeah. Once they
sounds
did that...
Sounds like Ezra's second business.
There was another toy.
We're only 13 minutes in here, dude. Nice.
They had the creepy crawlers, which was...
I remember the creepy crawlers. And then they did the same thing with gummy candy, where kids could make candy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
That was neat.
They kept coming up with all the most interesting and entertaining ways for kids to burn the shit out of their their hands.
Yeah.
Really, we were walking around with blisters and everything, and nobody ever thought about suing the toy company.
Why? I had hours of fun.
No, your parents just look at you and go, pay attention to the directions, you little dork, you know, and they hit you on the head.
You little dork.
Yeah, and they hit you on the head, you know. And nowadays, it's like... You know, you skin a finger of undoing one twisty, and then, you know, these hyperactive soccer moms. I'm suing Mattel.
I got an interesting email today about a guy whose son has autism, and his son, he actually sent his kid to school with a wire on.
A wire?
A wire.
You mean like a police wire?
I do. And he recorded 6.5 hours of conversation of the kid at school. And during the course of which, he found out that the reason his autistic child was having violent outbursts at school is the kid was being bullied by his own teachers.
Really? They were making fun of him?
Yep. They were making fun of him. And he would say, can I see daddy after mommy? Because every Friday he goes to see his mom. And he always likes to know that he's coming home to see daddy again after mommy.
Yeah.
And the teacher said, no, you can't see.
What?
And the kid just had like an outburst. And they've had him in class. He's not a new student. They've had him in class for a year and a half. They are completely aware of what the kid is asking. They know him.
Yeah.
And there's another part where she calls him a bastard.
What? Yeah. Why?
That's exactly the dad's point.
And does the kid act up, or is he a good kid?
No, he's a good kid. He just starts crying because he wants to see his dad.
Wow.
And he's autistic. I mean, this is normal behavior.
Yeah. Is he going to a special needs school?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And they're abusing him there. And so, but this is why I bring it up, because you said if the kid skins their finger, he sues. Instead of suing the school district, the father said, I want them fired. And the school district said, we can fire one but not the other, owing to union rules and statutes and things. And he said, okay, then I want a public apology. And I want these women to get online, and here are their names, and here's what they did. And he is attempting to create, it's on Huffington Post right now, public outcry against these teachers and saying, students, where these teachers went, this is who she is, because the woman who didn't get fired is now teaching at another school in the district. They just moved her to a different school. So he's saying, students in that class, here's who is teaching your children. This is what she did to my son. And he's public. And he is just completely... And I just thought, I wonder to what degree that becomes defamation of character, if it's true. Because I'm not familiar with those laws. But he didn't sue the district. Instead, he took it right to the public. And I thought, what an interesting choice. He didn't want money. He wanted justice.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
I loved it. I thought, you know, good for you. What a good dad. And
would you want that to happen to anyone else's kid?
You don't want that to happen to anyone's kid. And what I thought was really interesting was, having studied micro expressions, when he talks about the teacher, his eyebrows go down and his lip curls. He goes like this, and it's disgust and anger. I mean, you can see it's a micro expression, and it just flashes. And I thought, because at first I was like, okay, how much of this is him just trying to make a viral video and da-da-da-da? But you can see the actual pain in his face. And he made it when it was fresh. And he tells you why he made it. And it's like a 17-minute long video. But I watched it, you know, like kind of going through it. And he explains the setup. He explains what happened. And he plays the actual audio. Oh, really? And you can hear the teachers.
Wow.
And they're not actually hitting the kid or anything.
No, no.
But it's awful. But I thought it was fabulous that the guy actually said, no, no, I don't want money. I'm not suing the district. Although I could. Yeah. And he could. Yeah. The teacher talks about how the teacher's assistant is going to have to teach today because she had a fight with a bottle of wine, and the bottle of wine won.
What?
And she was heaving all morning.
Who said that? The teacher was sauced?
That in front of the kids.
The teacher was sauced, or the substitute teacher?
There was no sub. There was a teacher and an assistant. And she was like, oh, you guys are going to fight here. This other person is in charge today. The assistant is in charge today because I'm too drunk to teach this class.
Oh, boy.
Essentially, you know, she's just like, I was heaving all morning. She said I had the dry heat.
Who needs to know that?
Yeah.
Definitely not a group of autistic children.
Not a kid. Yeah.
You know, but essentially what the guy's point was these ladies never thought they would get caught.
Because
the kids don't. They can't come home and say so-and-so was drunk because they don't process that, you know?
So they were all autistic in this class.
It was a special needs class.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure.
Okay.
But it was definitely a special needs
class.
Yeah,
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the only way you can be an effective teacher is if you keep some sort of distance between yourself and your students. You don't want to make... It's fine to be friendly with the students. It's fine to be a good role model. But you don't want to talk like Mrs. Krabappel on The Simpsons and think you're going to get a laugh out of the kids.
That's not what she was doing. She was talking to the other teacher. Like the two teachers in the room were talking to each other as though the children were not even there.
Oh, okay. All right.
It was pretty bad news. I mean, it was like, dang. You know, and calling the kid a bastard, kind of saying, no, you can't see. Instead of just saying, yes, of course, you'll get to see Daddy, and moving on into his lesson. And the reason that he sent the kid to school with a wire was the teachers were complaining that he was having violent outbursts.
Yes.
And what you don't hear is the kid go crazy because they say, you can't see your dad. He threw chairs and screamed for a half an hour. And he did have a violent outburst, but the dad doesn't play that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, the dad doesn't play what the teachers had to deal with. But what he does play is the fact that it is their fault.
Huh.
And still, even if he was acting out like that,
you don't call a kid a bastard.
Class. Yeah, and
you don't say how drunk you are.
And you have to work with the kids to some degree,
right?
Yeah.
Well, especially if they've known him for a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, like the dad was saying, this is normal behavior. He talks to himself, and autistic kids. You know, some autistic kids, not all, but some of them do. That is normal. I talk to myself. I'm like, you know, I'm probably autistic. I rock back and forth all the time. But, and I'm very blunt. Maybe I do have Asperger's or something.
Oh, right? I don't know.
But anyway, these kids just do that, and the teacher is like, "Who are you talking to? Shut your mouth."
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome.
See, I've got three siblings, and each one of them is either a teacher or has been a teacher.
You're right.
Recently, like my
your sister's a professor.
My sister is a professor of contemporary American art. She works at a prominent museum. Mm-hmm. I have another brother who's a history teacher. I have another brother who has been a teacher, who's currently working at a school. They both brothers have been coaches, and they both know what it's like to deal with, you know, troubled kids.
And troubled parents.
And troubled parents. And
I'm not saying their job is easy, but there comes a point at which that crap is unacceptable.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't call a little 10-year-old boy a bastard.
Yeah.
You don't do it.
Yeah, they've never done anything like that before, but they, but still, you know, it's hard being a teacher, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And because you've got, especially now, I don't know what it is, but I think you've got, I don't know, I think that the parents who are now in their 40s and 50s grew up in a very permissive time, and it was a time when every kid was looked upon as a winner and a champ, and you can do no wrong, and so now they're having these little angels that don't have the guidance that a sterner parent would have had, say, 30, 40 years ago. And so the kids, you know, the parent becomes this weird figure, you know, part-time pal and enabler to the kid. And yet he's not really, he or she doesn't really want to be stern with the kid. Not in every situation, but in a lot of situations. So whenever there is a problem with the kid at school, whether the kid is bullied or is being a bully or is failing in a subject or not performing well in sports, the parent is much more likely to get angry at the teacher or the school and come down in a rage because it's like, you're picking on my kid.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pick on my kid. It's like you're picking on me.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that every parent should, you know, say that the child is the root of the problem and go after the child either. But it's just like people overreact. And I've seen firsthand some parents really, really pull some Lulus for, you know, in front of teachers and, you know, authority figures that they, you know,
mm-hmm.
deed their children over to. I remember growing up that if you were a kid and you were misbehaving and you lived in kind of a close-knit neighborhood, one of the other parents would take a whack at you, you
yep.
know, or keep you in line.
Oh,
or
yeah.
complain to your parents. Now it's like a you country full of she-bears that are hyperactive, and it's like, don't you dare touch my child or I'll sue you or this or that and mm-hmm. everything. And it's like...
Well, there was that... I think I brought this up a couple weeks ago. I don't remember what I've said on here and what I haven't anymore. But there was a really interesting... A friend of mine named Jeff
uh-huh.
is a teacher in North Carolina. And he posted a comic strip. And he was like, this is so true. And it had a parent-teacher conference about 30 years ago and a parent-teacher conference today. And in that comic, on the left-hand side, the kid was getting a bad grade. And the parents were saying, Charlie, explain this F. And on the right-hand side, Charlie had a bad grade, and the parents were saying to the teacher, teacher, explain this F.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Jeff was like, this is where it's gone. You know, it's not the kid's responsibility anymore. Like this whole shift.
Before it was up to the individual to earn their grade, and we all just assumed that the education program was good, and now that there's all these doubts in our educational system, it's, oh, are you teaching my child well enough?
And there's no responsibility for their own behavior. Like
right.
the kids that are going to school and behaving poorly or not doing their homework or anything like that, it's like, well, the teacher should really be keeping up on that. Well, a teacher has 30 kids, usually between 18 and 30 children in a public school anyway, that they're trying to be mindful of. And
right.
every single one of them, to varying degrees, there are certain parents that are active in the child's life and taking a vested interest. But for that one kid who have invested parents, there are 29 more that don't. And at what point is it really the teacher's responsibility? You know, it's like parents are so happy to dump their kids off. And I'm not saying that all parents are like this, but a lot of parents are happy to do that. Or on the flip side, parents who aren't invested at all, teachers who aren't invested either, and kids who are getting blamed for not taking care of business when they're only 10. You know, like I've seen that too. And so it's tough and interesting. Because
mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, I mean, my parents were very active and they were like, did you do your homework? And my dad always said, if you come home and at 3 o'clock you get your homework done, you got the rest of the evening and you don't have to worry about it. Just get it done. Take care of business and then have an evening. But I never did it.
Mm-hmm.
I would always be doing it right before bed or staying up late and sneaking with my lights on, you know, oh crap, I forgot to write that report. And he was right. He was totally right. If you just take care of business, you got the rest of the day to screw around and the stress is gone. Instead of having this whole day where you're like, oh, I got to do that assignment.
But there's only so many hours of daylight left and I need to go enjoy those.
Yeah, but usually, I mean, kids don't really have more than a half an hour of homework. You know, I mean, and I don't know, not always, you know, but
he was right
back then. But he was on me. I mean, he was like, did you get it done? Did you get it done? Without a parent doing that, the teacher can only do so much. So it's 26 minutes in, and I would like to reward somebody who clicks like on our Facebook page. You guys are all looking at me like, what? There's a little red dinosaur on the table.
There's a lot of people that click like.
You know what? You're right. So how can we do this? I want to do like a little drawing or so. Everyone who clicks like, I'll put their names in a drawing.
Okay.
And we'll draw the name next week for the little red dinosaur.
Are we offering a prize?
Yeah, it's right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
great.
Can you hand it to me?
Yes.
Ezra, can you grab it?
Yeah.
And I'll wind it up so they can hear it because it winds up. And it's a little scooty. It's called a Zoomster.
Oh, we're doing a prize.
Yeah, we're doing a prize this week. I just thought it would be a really fun thing to reward. It's not a big deal. It's just a little toy. Mm-hmm. But it's really cute. Let's see. Yeah, it's one of those things where you pull it back and it goes. It's really cute. It's cute, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so we'll give it away. We bought it at Easter and I scooted it across the floor and enjoyed it. And I thought, oh, I think someone else, it's still got the tag on and everything, might enjoy this.
All right, sure.
So everyone who clicks like on our Facebook page will be put in a little drawing. Next week, we'll draw the name on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, between the release of this podcast and the release of the next one.
Right. And then whomever wins will post it.
And we'll announce it on our next podcast.
Yeah, we'll announce it on the podcast and then they'll have to private message their address and we'll send it to them.
Great.
How's that?
I like that.
So every week we'll give something away that we want to get out of the house.
That sounds good. We're cleaning house. Rashi's, we're getting rid of stuff.
Huh?
Rashi's going next.
Yeah.
No, we've tried giving him away. He always finds his way.
He keeps coming
home.
Back.
Yeah. Here's an item.
Came back. And you were, I am so sorry for interrupting you and distracting you. Did you want to talk about something with parents being responsible for kids and homework?
I was just saying that I was an amazingly poor student when it came to doing homework.
You were an amazingly poor student in every subject except the ones you liked.
Yes, if it was.
But the ones that you liked, you were unparalleled in.
Yeah.
She said, ending a sentence with a preposition.
Yes, but however, you know, I excelled in comedy class, both comedy writing class and appreciation of movie comedy class. Now, how am I going to get a job doing that? Doing something like that?
Gee, I can't imagine you having a job writing things like comedy
cartoons, you know,
television.
And stuff like that. You know, it was
I think it worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Call me crazy, but I think you kind of found your niche.
I think I did, you know, because I went to a liberal arts college. I probably went to the liberalest of liberal arts colleges.
You went to Emerson.
Emerson in Boston. And,
for those of you who know what that is.
So if you were in Emerson.
My good friend Allison Packard.
Did she go there?
She did.
She did?
She's part of the Emerson Mafia.
All
you guys.
Right. Another member.
See?
Okay.
You and Dennis Leary and Eddie Gorodetsky, all you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Who else went there that they would know? Arlene Sorkin.
Harley
Quinn went there. Same time Paul did.
Jay Leno.
Jay Leno went to Emerson?
Jay Leno went to
did
Emerson.
Did not know.
Yeah, went to Emerson.
Okay.
Who else? Gosh, there's just a lot of people behind the scenes. A lot of people you've never heard of.
Making my special juice.
Who are, you're making your toddlers and tiara cocktail there.
My pixie crack.
Yeah.
Wait, that's not, pageant crack.
So, yeah, the thing about Emerson was like.
The woman who did Rugrats and Little Miss Sunshine, the cartoon producer.
Oh, Kate Boulair.
Yep. She also went.
She also went to Emerson. Mm-hmm. God, there are so many I'm probably leaving out. But Norman Lear, going way far back. Creator of All in the Family. Mom,
wow.
Most of the great television of the last 40 years.
Nice.
Who else?
Lots.
Lots. Lots of lots of people.
Liberal arts college is how you got into this.
Oh, yeah. So so if you went to Emerson, you woke up early in the morning, you dressed in black, you hung out on the wall, you were bleary-eyed because you were probably partying the night before or having a lot of fun.
Or talking to the ghost in the stairwell.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was the only one who did that. I mean, most everybody else was into spirits of a different type. Mm.
There's a little toy in my Kingdom of Loathing game that I play, and she's called a small medium.
Oh, really?
And it's a little familiar that you can carry around with you, and she gives you drinks. Those are the spirits.
Really?
Yeah.
I was a bartender. We used to have a...
Isn't that cute?
We used to have an Emerson pub night.
I love that freaking game. I love it. I talk about it. Trisha Lasky. There now. Her name is Scott Adsit. There. I think we covered everything, right?
We used to have pub night at Emerson. And I was the bartender there. And so
we were just talking about... Oh, you were on your Twitter talking about bartending.
Talking about bartending.
You had made a drink for Easter.
Yeah.
Which was quite good. He called it the Sweet Jesus.
Did I give you the recipe for that?
No.
the sweet Jesus. We were out with my mom on Good Friday, and instead of being in church, we were at a Mexican cantina drinking it up. And so I asked the
Day of Our Lord.
Asked the bartender if I could make up a special drink. So it was dark rum, Myers rum, absolute citron, pineapple juice, lime juice, and grenadine. Shake it up, drink it down. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's like punch, you know.
The sweet Jesus.
Call it the sweet Jesus.
It's hysterical.
Yeah. Great.
Mm-hmm. And it was good. When I die, and your mom said, "Oh, Paul, that's so delicious."
When I die, Satan will be greeting me in hell with it. Here's your sweet Jesus. Oh, you're in hell now because you were drinking on.
Hey, it's Ruth. Did you save me a seat? Yes, I did. Just like I promised I would.
Well, everybody I know.
Ruth and I have a deal. You know, Harry Houdini and his wife had this deal that whomever died first for 10 years, the other one would try to contact them from beyond the grave. Ruth and I have a deal that whoever dies first saves the other one a seat in hell.
Nice. Good deal.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I'll save you one too if you want. You just got to save me one.
Everybody we know will be there.
Okay, done. You're in the deal. Huh?
Just about everybody we know will be there.
I know. It would be like a reunion.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Yep.
Just my luck, I'll get stuck in some place like limbo or something.
Purgatory.
Yeah, purgatory.
Yeah.
You can always go to oblivion.
Where's Ezra? He can't make up his mind whether he's coming. He's not sure he's going to be here or not. Oh, okay.
Well, atheism is very trendy now, so you could always wind up in oblivion with all the Hollywood people who say there's no nothing after death.
No, they say there is nothing after death, not no nothing.
There's nothing after death.
That's a double negative.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. See,
this is our education episode, grammar.
I'm grammar police. Yeah. I was just going to say that. What the hell is going on?
I don't know.
I ended another sentence with a preposition. I did it again. What's going on? You know, there's a joke about Harvard. It says, I'm like so insecure. I'm like, did I tell this one on here?
What?
This guy's wandering around the Harvard campus and he says to one of the students, "Hey, can you tell me where the cafeteria is at?" And the guy goes, "Excuse me. At Harvard, we do not end our sentences with prepositions." And this guy says, "Oh, I'm sorry. Can you tell me where the cafeteria is at, asshole?"
There you go. Must be a local boy. Local Massachusetts boy who would do that. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Why are they snots?
Oh, massholes.
Massholes.
No, assholes. No, but you know.
What?
Everybody heard that term.
Massholes?
Really funny. Massholes. Massachusetts idiots. That's funny, Paul.
My friend Lisa Cates taught me that when we were driving around, and she goes, "Look at all the massholes out today." Because we were driving somewhere and there were people cutting them off, cutting us off in all directions, and like, "Masshole, that's pretty funny." And she just shot me an irritated look like, "Yeah, I drive this highway every day. They're always out here. See how amusing it is."
So like, little red dinosaur, click like.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Let's see. Oh, here's another interesting item. We're not going to give it away on the show anytime soon, but as long as we're talking about.
Is this that dirty old trap you brought in the house?
Yeah, take a look at this.
He comes in from the backyard.
Oh, and careful he's like, with where that's aiming.
I know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Deuce is like, "Excuse me."
No,
he comes in, this thing has been out in the garage for 8 years, has been on the floor in the corner of the garage for 8 years. It's covered in dust, spiders, cobwebs, and nasty.
Yeah.
And he comes beaming in the back door like, "Hey, I'm going to show this to Ezra." I said, "Take it outside." And he goes, "But it's," I said, "it's dirty. Take it outside." And he's like, "But it's just for a minute." I said, "Don't bring that in. There's spiders all over it. Take it outside." And he goes, "I'll take it outside and clean it and then bring it right back in." And he did. So here it is.
This is, if my, the guy I bought it from on eBay, Swifty McLiarface, can be believed. He has like
no horrible eBay name.
I know. He's Lame-O McUse Your Pool's brother.
Yeah. He has no star.
Swifty
he has a negative
McLiarface.
Star on his, on his
Swifty McLiarface.
Swifty McLiarface.
The guy you can trust.
This is an actual Tasmanian tiger trap.
That's sad.
Well over 120. Oh, you think that's sad? Hobart! Can you know him in here for a second? And there he goes. He runs in fear of this thing. It's actually...
That's horrible.
Well, that's how we got
Hobart. Why did you buy that? That's a horrible contraption, and the idea of a little animal having its leg stuck in there makes me very, very sad.
Well, years ago, I was prowling around on eBay, and suddenly it came up, thylacine trap, and it's like, that's impossible. And it's like, it was from a guy down in Australia, down in Tasmania, who had it, and he was clearing out some old trapper stuff. And way back when this was used, which was probably 120 years ago, there were a lot of bush rangers and you know, fur guys and trappers down in Tasmania. I mean, there's some really heartbreaking photos that I have.
I don't want to hear about them even. No,
local
stop.
Wildlife.
Stop.
Oh, okay. Anyway, but this apparently was used when the thylacine was deemed a pest and there was a bounty put on the poor creature's head. So this certainly looks big enough to trap, God, maybe a bear?
Human.
I don't know. Well, human.
Yeah, that looks, that looks like a bear lot trap. Like a bear trap. Yeah. But there is some differences.
Bear trap's bigger.
Wider, yeah.
Yeah.
But that is long and it has a similar, I don't know.
I think that was made for marsupials. Like, because
what does it say on the side? Bellamy's?
Bellamy's. So maybe that was an Australian maker or an English maker of traps or something.
Okay.
Because something like this would just like tear an animal's leg into. I mean,
I would think that with, I imagine that thylacines aren't much bigger than Mugsy. How much did they weigh on average? About 50 pounds?
50 to 60 pounds.
Okay. So they're just, they're maybe twice Mugsy's size.
I mean, we're talking top. The biggest one was probably the size of a German Shepherd, maybe.
Were they as big as Malta? I'm talking about Renee's dog right now.
Smaller
than Malta, but bigger than Mugsy.
Yeah, the one
so
I
German
saw.
German Shepherd, okay.
The one I saw was about Mugsy's size.
Okay.
And it
that's
was
a small
it was,
one.
It was running away fast and it was low
well,
to the ground.
That's what they did.
Yeah.
But that would snap its little leg bone and it would be able to get right out.
Well, in most accounts
God,
I heard.
Talking about this.
In most accounts I heard they were caught in snare traps, but a lot of times they were
What's
set.
What's
a
snare
for,
trap?
A snare trap is like a wire, you know, like for catching rabbits. You know, when you see like a trap that's when an animal's hanging, you know, upside down.
Oh,
you know,
no.
That's, like
that's
that.
Even worse.
But this, I could believe this was probably for dingoes, maybe, if this was used in Australia, because dingoes were a pest. Maybe even for kangaroos. I don't know. It's like, it's hard to say.
Well, I want it back outside.
Well, you got to admit, him owning it means it's one less person with it that would use it.
Yeah.
This is true.
Well, that is how we got Hobart.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rashi found it about some years back.
Rashi found it on eBay and bought it from Hobart.
No, well, Rashi found it and said, what's this? And I said, it's a Tasmanian tiger trap. He said, can I use it? And I said, yeah, but, you know, you'll never catch anything with it. And the next thing, snap, Hobart was there with his tail caught in the thing.
Yeah.
Beginner's luck on Rashi's part.
That's why Hobart's tail is a little crooked.
A little crooked. We had it straightened out. But what are the odds, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Sock monkey, you know, first time he uses it, he snags the last one in existence.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a bizarre coincidence, I can't even fathom it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's the story of the Tasmanian tiger trap. We should actually leave it here by the...
No!
By the fireplace.
Why?
Santa Claus.
Yeah.
He ain't getting away
Krampus.
This year. Well, Krampus. Krampus would
put
just
put his hoof in there.
Yeah, he'd just
be
pick it up.
A bad day for Krampus.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
He would learn really fast, and then it'd be a crying child.
Well, Krampus would just pick it up and wail the tar out of us with it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of an interesting thing.
It's sad.
Well, it's interesting. We've been going over the house, cleaning things up and getting things out. I'm reactivating my eBay store and just
Paul
selling
Dini's
off...
Paul Dini's Cyber Garage.
Yeah, I'm going to sell off a lot of memorabilia.
Yeah, you had
a
meeting about that this morning.
Yeah.
How'd it go? I didn't even ask you.
It went really well. One of the first things I'm going to start selling are some... old things from my office at Warner Brothers, because I've been paying storage fees on the stuff. When I left Warner's and went over to work on Lost, I just didn't even want... I was in the middle of leaving Warner Brothers, starting work on Lost, leaving the house up in the hills I had been running for about 8 years.
That was a great house.
Buying this house, and I just had a ton of stuff that I didn't want. To, oh, yeah, that was a great house. I just didn't want to deal with anymore. So there's like a pile of animation cells. There's all those sculptures, all the animators' maquettes. There's tons of drawings, and it's all just sitting in a box. I looked through it about 2 months ago, and I just thought, a lot of this stuff is really cool, and if I ever do a sequel to the Batman animated book, here's all the stuff I could use.
Yeah.
But at this point, I just want to get rid of it all. I'm reading this book by the Dalai Lama about living kind of like a spiritual life. And
what's it called? How to Be Compassionate.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Mugsy brought it in and left it on the bed for me. And I was like, are you hungry or something? What do you want from me right now?
Well, it's very unique that Mugsy was able to bring it in. So I think maybe we should read that book and divine some wisdom from
it. I guess I could probably use some advice on how to be compassionate for sure.
What?
It's surprising how many dog-eared pages were in that book.
Dog-eared wah-wah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm just, you know, my theory is I used to be a passionate collector about everything. Toys, action figures, comic books. And I realized that I'm actually getting toward the age where a lot of men are moaning, if only my folks had saved my stuff, I could sell it now and be rich. Well, it's like I'm at that age and I have all my stuff. Nobody ever threw it out. I never threw it out. I still have piles of the crap, so maybe I should go through and sell the stuff. At the very least, anything. If it's not in the house, it's out of mind. Out of sight, out of mind. That's what I say.
Yeah.
What, you don't sound very convinced.
No, I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
I know that you've been stressed out, and we pay a lot of money to store that stuff.
Not anymore. So
no, we're still paying it until it's gone.
Yeah, so I got to
go down. So help us get rid of our crap.
Yeah, I got to go down there and haul up a truck full of crap. And
We should probably sell what's out there first.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Ever get rid of the muskox?
No, he's still down in storage.
Do you want it?
I'm still looking for a good home for him.
No
so,
place to put that.
If anybody out there wants a stuffed muskox, I was going to say stuffed live muskox, except he's not alive.
At least not after the stuffing.
I got to check. Now. You know, the weird thing is, like, I got to check and see if I can sell that taxidermy, because a lot of that stuff has to be sold under the table, because every state has different game laws, and sometimes you can buy something in one state and have it shipped to another, but you can't sell it out of the state you're in. And there's this whole weird thing with bears, for instance. Like I can go out hunting, I can get a bear tag, go off to the mountains, get a really nice black bear, have it stuffed up nice or made into a rug, or eat the damn thing, but I can't sell it. And nor can I buy a bear rug in this state.
Interesting.
I can go out and get one myself, but I can't buy one. I can't buy a mountain lion in the state. But
it's kind of like those weird pet laws where, like, you can't buy a ferret in California, but you can bring it here somehow and then own one here, but
yeah,
you just can't buy it or sell it.
Well, is that like if you move it, like if you move here and you've already had it?
Yeah, I assume so, because I also know a lot of people.
This is my ferret. I brought it with me. You know, that's my big plan to steal a poodoo from the zoo, you know.
Mm, yeah.
I plan to take a poodoo and put it under my arm. And as I'm leaving the gate and they try to stop me, I'm going to say, no, this is my poodoo. I brought it with me. Is it going to work? No.
Maybe. Probably not.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Actually, I checked the adoption and I think they're out of poodoos.
What?
Poodoos are gone.
No, that's not possible.
I don't think they have any poodoos.
Bob Harris would have told me if they were taking them out of the zoo.
Okay, all right.
You know, that's part of the reason why I'm friends with Bob Harris, is because I contacted him and said, so, California importation laws for poodoos. Uh-huh. What are we thinking about having them as a pet? And he said, I don't think you can.
I don't think you can.
And that's how I became friends with him.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't see we were going to adopt an animal out of the zoo. And
did adopt an animal.
What did we get? The Fusa?
No, the maned wolf.
Oh, we got
that's
the maned wolf?
That's what you wanted.
Yeah, the maned wolf.
You want another one?
Well, I was either the maned wolf or the Fusa. I'm good with either one.
Why don't you get the Fusa too? The maned wolf was for Sparky.
That's right. You know what?
What?
We'd have the main wolf fight the Fusa. No, that's too grim.
What are you guys going to do? Make paper footballs out of your adoption papers and play finger football?
Yes.
That's the only way you can get those two to fight each other.
I think they just run away from each other. They're not natural enemies in the wild, but they wouldn't be friends if they were thrown in the same cage. They probably just attack each other. Or they probably just go to different corners of the cage and just sort of like growl at each other. Weird animals.
You love weird animals.
Yeah.
You do.
Anybody know what a Fusa is?
I know what a Fusa is.
Yeah. Or do our listeners know? No, they probably all see Madagascar.
Tell them.
So, what is a Fusa?
Oops, you forgot.
It's a carnivore.
I don't know if it's carnivore.
It is a carnivore.
It is?
Yeah, it's not a cat. It looks like one.
They have orange eyes, right?
Yeah.
And like that white mane and the...
No, they
are
have...
they civets?
Yeah, they're kind of civet. They're members of the civet family.
They're
a civet that looks like a small puma. They look cat-like, but they're not really cats.
Right.
Like hyenas, they're not really dogs.
Right.
Yeah, the Fusa and the hyena are related to each other.
They are?
Yeah, work that one out. That's
I did
scary.
Not know that.
Yeah. It's all the civet family. You know, you never going to hear very much about them.
Except for their coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of stick to themselves.
Is that the poopy coffee?
Uh-huh.
Come on. Who have you ever had that? Would you ever? I
no.
would. That's disgusting.
Oh, then you don't want to know where that Himalayan coffee comes from.
There's no civets up in the Himalayas.
No, they're Yetis.
Yeah. Mm.
That's how they get that coffee, is that the Yetis eat the coffee berries.
I think that there would be more news if they actually found a Yeti in the Himalayas. And I think if they did, it would be really poor form for the first thing they did with it. Hey, we found a Yeti. I know. Let's have meat these beans. And crap out coffee.
Shh.
Maybe they can only find the poop and coffee beans. Like, you've never seen a Yeti.
Right, because it's completely organic for coffee beans that usually grow in climes like Venezuela to grow up in the Himalayas.
Yeti's a big guy. He can travel.
Yeah.
I can't with you.
No?
I can't with this.
We were in Carmel a couple of weeks ago, and we went to Carmel Valley Roasters.
Carried by a swallow.
Oh, yeah.
And they have really good coffee.
African or migratory?
They have really...
African or...
European.
Yeah, European.
Sorry.
They have really good coffee at this place in Carmel, and they have like special, what is it, like Mount Everest or Himalayan coffee? And I'm going, wait, there's no coffee beans up that high. They go, yes, they grow them up there, and it's a special blend, and it's real expensive for a bag. And it's like, oh, well, thank you, Swifter McLiar coffee face. I'll take a bag full of that. And he told me
what is up with Swifty McLiar? You need to stop doing business with him.
Well, apparently there's this guy.
That is a bad idea.
Apparently there's this guy named Swifty who has different guises just to take advantage of me. Yes. Kind of like your friend Charlie Adler playing the devil in Cow and Chicken. He keeps just popping up all over the place.
Oh, he has Charlie
more businesses
Adler.
Than I do.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen Charlie Adler in a long time.
He is a fabulous man.
He is indeed.
So what else? What else we got going?
I love him. So you didn't tell everybody what you got in your Easter basket.
Oh, well, in my Easter basket, we're putting away some things here. There's a pea shooter. Annoy the sock monkeys with this. I'll just blow this at Rashi when he's not looking.
Mm-hmm.
Chris will be after me with a butcher knife for that. These right. are
well, you learned
balls.
That from your
Those
mother.
Yes,
they,
that's right.
They look like gold covered cigars.
They do,
don't they? They're very fancy.
Well, yes.
I found this really great store. Did I talk about it last time? It's called Zookies. I told you guys, but I don't know if I said it on the podcast.
Yeah, I think you told it on the podcast.
Yeah, it's all this homemade artsy stuff for kids, and she made this, you know, like this one of the things in that's available for the Easter basket. The Easter Bunny and I had a meeting, and we went over to Zookies and got Paul's Easter basket there because he said, you know, I just really don't want candy, which is horse shit because he always wants candy. So I went to C's after Zookies, and he got a Zookie C's, not as much as I would have otherwise. So, but the Easter Bunny and I had a meeting, and one of the things that we got him, they had homemade sparklers. Which are in there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then they've got these poof balls, which it's like little paper balls. It's like spit wads, kind of, but they're fancier. And they come with a longer trajectory, and they're swanky. And then there's also a make-your-own superhero mask kit.
That's cool.
Oh, that's
and there's
right.
crayons in that are molded
the
in the shape
molded,
of a peanut.
And they're different like sizes of peanuts. So it actually looks like a bag of mixed peanuts.
Yeah, right? It really does. And then there's a pencil with a monkey on it. And Mistina, who's a female magician, I've mentioned her on here before, came in there with me. And she was like, oh, this place is fabulous. Except she has a British accent that I can't imitate. But we had a great time in there, the bunny and I. And
that's
Tina.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and so, and Paul's got this monkey who's having a really bad day.
He's got candy stuck up his butt. He's got a long tube that has multicolored candy sticking out of his butt.
Say,
he's like
a
pencil topper monkey, but it's on candy.
Yeah. Well, this will be the next prize we give away, one of these, because we have one to keep and then one of the, well, you know, we shouldn't break up the twins. Oh, this was Rashi's also. Yeah, so we shouldn't do that. Okay, I won't give away your Super Rica.
Yeah, well, they can't have that. But they red dinosaur is up for grabs. Click like on our
God knows we have plenty of prizes to hand out here.
Yeah, we got plenty of stuff to go around. Here's this old issue of National Geographic.
Anything else?
A legendary film's ball cap.
Next week, a muskox.
Yeah, oh, come on. $7,000 and 7 feet of muskox.
Oh,
you know, I will never forget. At his old house, you had to walk up all these stairs. I know I've told you guys this, but I don't think I've ever said it on here. You had to walk up all these. His house was on the top of a very tall hill in the Hollywood Hills. It was a huge hill. And so you'd go up the driveway, which is a huge hill. You'd get to the top of the driveway and walk up a bunch of stairs up a hill, which was a real pain when you had groceries. You know, I mean, like Kevin and Jennifer live in a similar, Kevin Smith and his wife have a similar kind of house.
But they have an
elevator. They have an elevator in their house. So that's better. You know, like, but with Paul's, it was like, oh, come on. Friggin' come on.
I lived like the Grinch. Not only did you have to, you would have, you would go up the sweeping driveway at a steep angle to get your car up there and then park precariously. Then you would have to get out of the car, walk up a series of stone steps to the house, open the door, then come up a twisting staircase to the very top level of the house, which is where the living room and the kitchen was. And there was a window up there, and I actually could stare down at Hollywood like the Grinch, just staring down acrimoniously
at people. Also staring down, and this is why I bring it up, is because as you were coming up that hill, up those stairs, Paul had a very large door. And on either side of that door were very large windows. And you could see, it was very, very pretty colonial looking mm-hmm. house.
Yes.
And in the right window was the muskox ass. Not its face.
He didn't turn around.
Its ass.
Well, you couldn't get past by the horns. When you were entering the door, the horns would get in the way. So when you had to ease around the horns, it was easier for you to go in facing the muskox ass, because from the way it was mounted, that if you turned around to face people, the head would jut out slightly. So as soon as you walked in the door, you'd get gored by the horns. So because he was turned at an angle, so you had to turn him butt first. So it looked like you were walking and there's this big shaggy mound. It looked like Swamp Thing was over or something. And then you could ease around the horns the other way.
Wow. So instead of putting it somewhere else in the house.
It never really occurred to me.
Right.
You just wanted to moon LA.
Yeah.
And he did. For years.
Remember my towel rack in the bathroom? It was a water buffalo's head. Yes. Wasn't that great?
No, it was not.
It was like Fred Flintstone lived there.
It was so big.
It was so awesome.
It was so big, he couldn't even hang it on the wall. He just laid it on the floor sideways, like on its flat.
And I draped towels over the horns.
Put towels on its horns.
It was great.
It was ridiculous.
It was wonderful. And then I had that big fireplace in the bathroom with a boar's head. Warthog head over it.
Big warthog.
It was wonderful.
This is what our house would look like if I let him.
And then you'd come out of the bathroom. It was like a bathroom the size of our living room.
Yep.
And then
slice your toe open.
On the grizzly bear.
He had a grizzly bear rug with its mouth open and these giant teeth not facing the other direction, facing when you're coming out of his bathroom.
Many
so you
a
get
night,
out of the
I
shower, you're toweling your hair, and it's like, oh, grizzly bear just bit me on the toe.
Many a night I went spiraling over that grizzly bear to impact my head on the door. It was great. And then around the
It was great.
And then around the walls, there was there was another bear head. There was a javelina, a jaguar. God, it was like a man's room. It was like a man cave.
It was a man cave.
A caveman
cave.
Yeah.
I will never forget moving into this house for the first time. When we got engaged is when I moved to Los Angeles from Detroit.
Yeah.
And I remember the first day I was alone in the house. You were off. I think you were working at Lost at the time.
Uh-huh.
And you were gone for the day and I hadn't started, you know, like full-time work or anything yet. Because I was only here for a day. So anyway, first morning I wake up, I get some cereal and I look in the back of the cupboard and I go, what is that? I see something like shiny. Uh-huh. And I push the cereal boxes apart and I reach in and I pull out 4 Batman action figures in the blister pack. And I'm like, well, that is curious. Why is that in with the cereal? So when he got home, I said, Paul, I found these. And he goes, oh yeah, they were in with the cereal. And I said, right.
That's where he stores them.
I said, why? And he said, well, where else am I going to put them? And I said,
The bread box is full.
This is,
yeah.
The cheese safe has a spider made out of pipe cleaners and a candle in it right now. It's like, it doesn't even make any sense, but it set up the rest of, I knew exactly what it was going to be to live in this house mm-hmm. with him. Because when I moved into the house, when he bought the house, and we'll wrap it up here because this podcast is getting really long.
Yeah.
But I will never forget, when we got engaged is when he finally decided to buy a house.
Yeah.
He had never owned a house before this one. He had always rented.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at houses with him because, you know, like we know we're going to get engaged and I'm going to move out here and whatever. So we're looking at houses and he shows me one a couple streets over actually from where we are now. And I said, yeah, I like this. And he goes, you like it? It's a little small. It's not quite what I wanted. I said, no, it's good. And this is at the time that housing bubble was really kind of climbing fast, especially in California.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I like it. And he goes, well, I'm going to put a bid on it. And he put a bid on the house and he called me 2 days later and he goes, I got a house. And I said, you got the house? He goes, no, I got a different house. I said, you bought a different house than the one that we saw and agreed on? And he goes, yeah, but you're going to love it. And I said, okay, I'm all right.
They backed out of the deal.
I know, I'm not blaming you. It was just strange.
And this one landed on his lap as he was leaving.
Yeah, it was just...
Oh, okay, actually, well, I'll take this one then.
It landed on his sister. Yeah, and he took the ruby slippers and he clicked his heels 3 times. So anyway, so he calls and he goes, well, I bought a house. I said, okay. And he's in the house like 10 days later. It was a real fast turnaround. The house was just available really quick. So he calls me and I'm coming out on a Friday. and he was getting ready to move in. Like, it was happening really, really fast. Because, yeah. like, I used to come out, like, once or twice a month, and that was it. So I was gone for, like, 2 weeks. And in the 2 weeks I was gone, the turnover happened. The house was already vacant. It was ready for him. He was moving in. He was all. He called me. He goes, I furnished the new house. Oh. I said, you what? And he said, I bought all the furniture. I said, okay, because you're going to love it. And I said, I am. Because I remembered what his old house looked like. And I was like, oh, no. And I said, you know I'm going to be there Friday, right? And he goes, and it's going to be all installed and all done for you on Friday.
See, now here's where a guy thinks, I've done good. I've gone out and I have bought furniture.
I provided for my family.
I've provided and yeah. I've got some stuff that I
you
find.
Don't need to worry about anything.
I yeah, find very aesthetically pleasing.
That's exactly what it was.
And that
I
everything
found stuff
is
that
taking,
I find aesthetically pleasing. Notice
because
this.
Who is a greater avatar of my taste than myself?
You are the pinnacle of cultured, refined taste.
And it's like, that's the way a single guy thinks. And the rest of the world says, no, 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 no. It's like, what do you mean wait till you're out here to buy furniture?
I said, Paul, I'm going to be there Friday.
But
and he was like, and it's going to be all done. I've already done it. It's being delivered tomorrow. You're going to love it.
You're going to love it.
And I was like, I'm going to kill you.
But
and
why?
He was like, well, and he, that's exactly his point. He's like, I've never owned a house before. I said, you're not the only one who owns it. And he was like, yeah. Okay. And so it's been the same furniture for 7 years. And just today I was showing him like a picnic table for out back. 8 years we've lived here. And I was showing him a picnic table and he goes, I like that picnic table. Let's buy it. And I said, I don't like it. I showed it to you because I knew it was your taste. And he goes, well, let's buy it. And I said, okay, no. Now it's been 8 years. And now I'm going to start having input on what furniture comes in and goes out of the house. And he was like, no, I got this. I was like, I don't think you understand, pal. Game over. Like, we need to decide together.
It's okay. I don't care.
But I like
anymore.
That table.
What?
Yeah, you do too.
I don't care anymore.
You do too. You have very specific taste.
I know.
And it's good taste. It's just completely different than mine. It's like if I had, you know, before I moved here especially, like I have, you've softened me around the edges. But before I moved here, I'll tell you, I would like nothing more than an all-white room with just a piano in it. Like,
really?
Nowhere to sit, nothing, just sterile, clean, really organized. That is not what I married into. Not at all.
See,
which is totally okay, because I love you for what you are, but it's just not at all what I would have.
If I was calling the shots completely, I would have furnished the whole place to
that look monkey feels a lot better.
Early California. And by early California, I mean like Zorro. You know?
Right.
Like actual Mission
that Santa
furniture.
Barbara Mission stuff. You
I
like.
Mean actual like.
Oh, I know what you're talking
like
about.
Monks
like
monks making the stuff.
Wood
you know?
Desks with knife marks in them. I know what you would have here.
Don Diego de la Vega. You know, like big old chunky wooden things and big Spanish things in it.
I know, but you need a big sprawling Spanish ranch to house that stuff.
Let's buy one.
Here we go again.
Can we buy one?
You know, I actually had to ask him the question yesterday. I said, okay, larger house, avocado and lime ranch in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
Vacation home in Tahoe. Which is your priority so we can start planning? And he said, yes. And I said, no, we've got to pick one. And he said, I'll be practical. Lime ranch. I said, okay, it's totally fine. I just had to know which.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're thinking about buying an avocado and lime ranch. So if you have one available for sale, contact us.
Yeah. We're going to...
Preferably within driving distance of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Right?
It has to be both avocados and limes.
Yeah, to make really good margaritas and guacamole.
Oh, guacamole and margaritas. See,
we're going to have a big fire pit out back and people are going to come over. We're going to make margaritas and have guacamole. And,
and that's it.
It's going to be
all we're gonna
really
do
cool. You know, we'll go out to dinner.
We have very practical dreams.
I don't want to cook, but you can come over for happy hour. And
you don't want to cook? Are you ill?
No.
You always want to cook.
No, I want to get one of those huge fire pits like a Santa Maria barbecue and then just have, you know, like giant sides of beef, you know.
Just an animal on a spit.
You know, just come over. You know, you cut up some tri-tip, you throw it on a tortilla, you have a margarita. How pleasant is that?
It's very nice.
Go for a swim in the pool. Rashi comes over and beats you with a rock, you know.
Yeah, it'll be great.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Have a lime and leave with a lump.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll be our motto, Dad.
Yeah, good one, Randy.
Have a lime, leave with lump.
Yeah, I like that.
Then let's leave the podcast with a lump.
All right.
Dad, here, put your eye on this.
On where? Oh.
Yeah. I'm going to put my crown on my sash. It's going to say number one ass kicker. Woo!
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.